Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'll be reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from December 15, 2025, Section A, State and Local News. Fireman's Pension Board Discusses Next Steps by Ben Schaefer. Members of the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund Board, including Midland Mayor Lori Blong, discussed next steps in resolving issues with the fund. During its meeting on Tuesday, the Midland City Council voted to increase the city's employer contribution rate to the fund from 22.2% to 24.2%. During their meeting on Thursday, Blong and the board discussed a couple steps in the process of resolving the Fireman's Fund underfunding. The board discussed forming an actuarial committee to first search for a new actuary to analyze the fund. I do think that we lose some time efficiency in changing, but I think that we make up for that in less frustration in the long run and greater confidence in the numbers we've received, Blong said. Although the agenda for the meeting stated discuss strategic planning and set goals for Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund for one item, Blong said there are a few immediate issues that need to be resolved before getting too far ahead and formulating an entire strategic plan now. A strategic plan is more a comprehensive look at where we are and where we'd like to go, Blong said. One component of that could be partnerships between either Lauterbach and Amen or whoever we decide to go with for administrative support, but also with our investment advisors. I think there needs to be some conversation there to really feel that out in a more robust fashion. But that also feels like we have some fires to put out near term, and so we need to get those numbers from the actuary and figure out where we are. Blong added that a more organized, comprehensive roadmap to resolving the Fireman's Fund issue will come together after the city and fund board receive another actuarial report and iron out immediate issues. State gas prices lowest in nearly 3 years by Ben Schaefer. The average gas price in Texas is the lowest it's been in nearly 3 years, according to AAA. Gas prices in Midland are continuing to drop, falling 8 cents this week for a $2.67 average fuel price, a decrease of nearly 40 cents in the last 5 weeks, according to Reporter Telegram Archives. The state average is $2.57, according to AAA Texas. March 11, 2021, exactly 1,008 days ago, was the last time Texas gas price average was $2.57. This week, the Texas statewide average surpassed the lowest price of 2022, which was $2.60, reached on December 21, 2022. Gas prices will likely continue to drop in the coming days as crude oil prices have tended lower recently, AAA reported Thursday. No Texas cities showed an average gas price over $3. In the West Texas region, Abilene $2.54. Amarillo $2.49, El Paso $2.71, Lubbock $2.56, Midland Odessa $2.60, and San Angelo $2.54 all experienced decreases in their average fuel price. Only Abilene reported a weekly decrease, 12 cents, that was greater than the state average, 11 cents. A year ago, the average price for fuel in Midland was $2.87, 20 cents more expensive than this week. Midland's record high gas price was on June 11, 2022, when the average gas price sat at $4.52. TexasGasPrices.com reported the lowest gas prices in Midland could be found in the Northwest at Murphy USA on Briarwood Avenue and Midland Drive, and at Texaco on Briarwood and North Crest Drive. The most expensive fuel in the state is found in College Station, where the average fuel price was $2.77 this week. The least expensive gas was found in Sherman-Denison, where the average bottomed out at $2.44. Texas is home to the least expensive fuel in the nation by 7 cents. Mississippi, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arkansas round out the rest of the top 5 least expensive fuel states. MISD clarifies public hours for track by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD has clarified the hours the public can use the track at Midland Memorial Stadium in Central Midland. Superintendent Stephanie Howard told the Midland City Council this week that the district made the change this summer. Midland ISD told the Reporter Telegram that in 2020, the district had limited the public's use of the track to times when it is not being used by the district for practices and events. The facility is closed for public use during all school district practices and events, which may take place during holidays, weekends, and summer hours, the district reported. Midland ISD also clarified in an email that the facility is available for public use from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. on school days, from 5 a.m. to 6 p.m. on holidays and weekends from August through May, from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. during the summer, June and July. The public can access the track at the northeast gate near the old athletics office, Midland ISD reported. Signage about using the facility is posted on the gate. In January 2020, Midland ISD closed the track to the public whenever students were present in a move to enhance student safety, according to the Reporter Telegram article. Workshop explores expanding electric reliability in Permian by Mella McEwen. Electric demand in the Permian Basin is expected to soar in coming years as Permian Basin oil and natural gas companies increasingly turn to electrification of their equipment to meet environmental initiatives. The Texas legislature passed a bill during this year's session that was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott, requiring the Public Utility Commission of Texas and Electric Reliability Council of Texas to develop an electric reliability plan for the Permian Basin that addresses transmission needs in the region, additional capacity needed to meet the power demands of the energy industry, and streamlining interconnection processes. A workshop was held this week in the University of Texas Permian Basin's Engineering Building to discuss the needs and challenges of ensuring transmission and electricity reliability needs are met. The Permian Basin is a very important part of the state economy, and of the world, Lori Kobos, PUC commissioner, stated as she opened the workshop. She noted that the Permian Basin's robust oil and natural gas resources play a critical role in powering electric generation for ERCOT. Today reflects our commitment for implementing House Bill 5066 and work with stakeholders to gather information used by ERCOT to develop plans for the Permian Basin that will ultimately be approved by the PUC, she continued. Our members recognize that transmission and distribution planning is existential to the growth of the industry in the Permian Basin, and that growth is existential to the success of communities in the Permian Basin. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email, "This will help grow in the entire community, including public and higher education opportunities, healthcare options, and other innovations that are only happening right here." Dean Foreman, chief economist at the Texas Oil and Gas Association, stated that ERCOT itself has projected low demand from the Permian Basin will only grow, and indeed is not being met today. Many operators have installed their own generation capacity, including diesel and renewable-powered generators, but those raise costs and are less efficient than utility-scale generation, he said. Nick McKenna, Vice President, Midland Basin, with ConocoPhillips, told the gathering the Permian Basin is a significant portion of the company's portfolio. He also stressed the company's commitment to producing low-carbon barrels, and electrification will play a critical role in providing those barrels. Electrification eliminates the need for pneumatic equipment that contributes to emissions and takes trucks delivering diesel to drilling and completion sites off the road. Bonnie Dumas, Vice President, Capital Projects with Pioneer Natural Resources, estimated 45 megawatts of the company's demand is now services to local generators, which are scarce and could become obsolete to getting wells online. It's also expensive, costing $6 million a month to have local generation rather than connecting to the grid. Curtis Smith, Director, Upstream Oil and Gas Consulting, S&P Global Commodity Insights, told the workshop his company conducted a study at the request of ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Devon, Pioneer Natural Resources, and Diamondback Energy in 2019 that forecast a fourfold increase in demand. The Delaware Basin in particular is expected to see substantial growth. Demand is driven not only by the increasing electrification of equipment, but from increased water management and natural gas transportation and processing, he said. In addition, production is expected to continue rising, and producers see the grid as a long-term solution to reducing emissions, he said. The result is, if we continue with business as usual, by 2036 we end up with 17.2 gigawatts of industrial demand for oil and gas operations, Smith said. Robert Golan, manager, regional planning at ERCOT, said as soon as it receives verified load data from transmission service providers, it will perform the evaluations necessary to identify areas where transmission is needed and ensure those areas have the capacity to meet load forecasts. Monthly status updates will be issued, and he estimated a report on the Permian Basin study will be completed in 5 to 6 months. Office Holiday Hours by Dahlia Fahed. All branches of the United States Postal Service will be closed on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, an announcement on Thursday said. This affects all postal services, including retail services, mail delivery, and blue collection boxes. Post offices will close on Christmas Day and New Year's Day in observance of the two holidays. Post offices will be closed on Monday, December 25th, and Monday, January 1st. Blue collection boxes will not be serviced these days, and there are no residential or business deliveries, except for Priority Mail Express, which is delivered 365 days a year in select locations for an additional fee. Blue collection boxes are not serviced on Sundays or federal holidays, according to USPS. Following the holiday closures, post offices will be open and regular mail delivery resumes on Tuesday, December 26th and Tuesday, January 2nd. Many services, such as purchasing stamps and shipping labels, are available at USPS.com. For more helpful resources, including recommended holiday shipping and mailing dates, visit USPS.com/holiday news. How about on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve? Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve each fall on Sunday this year, when post offices are normally closed. There are no plans for limited hours on Saturday, December 23rd or Saturday, December 30th. Check your local post office for hours of operation. There are currently no plans for early blue box collection times on Saturday, December 23rd, or Saturday, December 30th, the U.S. Postal Service said. If you are unable to mail items before the scheduled collection box pickup times on December 23rd and December 30th, use the postal locator at tools.usps.com to find post office locations that may be open late. Midland City and County asks for input on road safety by Ben Schaefer. Midland County and City of Midland are asking for the public's help to identify and prioritize roadway safety projects to reduce serious injuries and fatal crashes in the area. Important roadway projects, according to Midland County, will be identified through data analysis public feedback, and with assistance from a Vision Zero task force. Vision Zero is the name of the comprehensive plan dedicated to reducing car accidents. These road improvement projects will include safety improvements to roadways, intersections, sidewalk and bicycle infrastructure, lighting improvements, and more. Midland County residents are encouraged to fill out the online survey regarding roadway safety in Midland. Lubbock joins ERCOT Grid in largest single transfer of customers. By Claire Howell. Lubbock Power and Light, the municipal electric provider for the city of Lubbock, has completed its integration into the power grid managed by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, the organizations announced this week. Lubbock is the first major Texas city to join the ERCOT grid in nearly 25 years. The move of LP&L's more than 100,000 customers in the Lubbock area to the ERCOT grid is the largest single transfer of customers in ERCOT's history, according to a statement from the grid operator. ERCOT manages the grid for 90% of Texas, and 70% of LP&L customers had connected to the ERCOT grid in May 2021. This significant milestone is the culmination of over 8 years of study and planning and opens the retail service area for customers to take advantage of our competitive wholesale market and electric rates, ERCOT CEO Pablo Vegas said in the statement. LP&L has touted the move as a journey to competition that allows its customers to shop around for retail electricity providers and potentially save on their electricity bills. The municipal utility will no longer directly sell electricity to customers or bill customers for electricity service, though it will continue to operate the power lines and poles that deliver electricity. Lubbock began planning a switch to the ERCOT grid from the grid managed by the Southwest Power Pool in 2015 after a 15-year contract with the utility company Xcel Energy expired. Joining ERCOT eliminates the need for Lubbock to build a power plant, which has estimated debt costs ranging from $350 million to $700 million, according to LP&L. How bright can car LED lights legally be? By Dahlia Fahed. New vehicles being built are increasingly made with brighter LED bulb headlights, but is that legal in Texas? For decades, the auto industry has used halogen bulbs for vehicle headlights. Halogen bulbs have a tungsten filament inside, and when an electric current passes through it, it heats up and generates light, according to cars.com. On the flip side, LED, or light-emitting diode, bulbs produce light when an electric current passes through its semiconductor, also known as diode. LED lights have proven to produce brighter light while also generating less heat than halogen bulbs, according to cars.com. Because of the brighter and cooler offerings, many auto manufacturers have switched to LED headlights. But by using brighter headlights for new vehicles, is that legal in Texas? Here's what we know. Are LED headlights legal in Texas? Yes. Vehicles with LED bulb headlights are legal in Texas. Is there a limit to how bright headlights can be in Texas? Yes. The Code of Federal Regulations outlines that headlights must have a luminous intensity between 500 to 3,000 candela. Candela is a unit of luminous intensity under the International System of Units, according to the National Institute of Standards and Technology. A candela measures the intensity or amount of light people see directly from light sources. For example, a headlight that produces an exceeding amount of candela could potentially stun drivers on the road, thus causing traffic accidents or disturbances. Are multicolored headlights allowed in Texas? No. The Code of Federal Regulations states that all headlights must be white. All bulbs must also have a DOT or appropriate SAE stamp on them to legally be used, according to the Texas Department of Transportation. TxDOT has not approved any red-colored bulbs for headlight use. Vehicles equipped from the manufacturer with approved clear lenses that are lighted by LED red lights will pass state inspection, according to TxDOT. But vehicles equipped with aftermarket lenses that are clear and lighted by a red bulb will not pass inspection. Tips: Are Americans greedy, or is service worse? By Nicole Russell. If you've ordered a coffee and been asked to tip your barista at Starbucks and hesitated, you're not alone. If you don't tip, will your chipper barista be let down? What does everyone else do? This was the subject of a fascinating new study by the Pew Research Center, which created an interactive fictional American town, Tipping Point, that asks users how they'd tip in various situations, and then lets you see how your answers compare to others. The survey is timely. Establishments requiring or asking for tips has increased. If I'm at a business and an employee hands me an iPad, I know I'm about to be asked to tip them on something that I've probably never paid a tip for before. According to Pew, 72% of U.S. adults say that tipping is expected in more places today than it was 5 years ago. Some have dubbed this new era tipflation because it seems so excessive. High-tech electronics are not the only cause. It seems like a trickle-down effect of participation trophies, the trend that picked up in the 1990s that rewarded kids and even adults just for being on a team, whether or not the team won. Advocates will say this has been around for decades. Cynics will say it ratcheted up in our lifetime. Hear me out. Tipping used to be based on service excellence. If a waiter was prompt, attentive, and polite, that person earned a 20% tip. Now, large parties at most expensive restaurants will find a 20% tip has been automatically added to their check, regardless of service. If everyone gets a trophy for being on the team, why shouldn't every establishment at least offer, if not expect, their employees to receive tips on their service, even if you do all the work? I've gone to some stores where I've done all the shopping myself, gone to the counter to pay for the items with my own money, and still been asked to tip. What am I paying for? Just the fact that the business exists? It seems like tipping culture is removing incentives for employees to do their best. In this tough economy, it's easy to see why establishments at least ask for tips. Times are hard for everyone, and a lot of people, particularly Americans, are generous. Around the holidays, a season that emphasizes charity, people tend to boost their giving. Still, it's difficult to reward establishments just for existing, and especially for subpar service. Understandably, Americans are torn about the new tipping culture they find themselves in. About 45% say they still tip based on specific situations, and 40% oppose suggested tip amounts, the Pew Research found. Recently, a viral TikTok and YouTube video showed a driver delivering $400 worth of food. When she realizes she isn't getting tipped, she says she'll keep the food her customer ordered. Reactions online were mixed, but many people commented that the driver is already getting paid by the app to deliver food, and a tip would have been a bonus, not an expectation. Employees might appreciate devices that at least encourage patrons to tip, but unfortunately, it doesn't appear to have succeeded. Adults in the survey said they tip because it's an obligation, and the industry that earned the most tips was still sit-down restaurants, followed by haircuts, food delivery services, and purchasing a drink at a bar. Just 43% of Americans always tip when using a taxi or Uber, and a mere 12% always tip at a coffee shop. The holidays are a time to be generous, but it's also important for society to reward a job well done. Tips should be earned, not expected. People should also be generous when given the chance. Americans spending their dollars must make this choice wisely, especially now that anyone can leave a tip just about anywhere. Buffett backs Oxy's deal with CrownRock by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. Berkshire Hathaway Incorporated has bought nearly $590 million of Occidental Petroleum Corporation stock this week after the Texas oil company agreed to buy private Permian producer CrownRock LP in one of the biggest energy deals of the year. The purchases were made in five tranches after the deal was announced on December 11, according to a regulatory filing published late Wednesday. Berkshire has been buying Occidental stock steadily over the last 3 years and is now the company's largest shareholder with a stake of just over 27%. Berkshire first invested in Occidental in 2019 to finance its $55 billion purchase of Anadarko Petroleum. Occidental Chief Executive Officer Vicki Hollub didn't need Buffett's help to fund the $10.8 billion CrownRock acquisition, but Berkshire's purchases this week will likely be seen as a sign of support for the deal. Hair suspension unlikely to be lifted soon by Juan A. Lozano and Cheyenne Mumphrey, Associated Press. A Texas high school black student who has been disciplined and kept away from his classroom for months for refusing to change his hairstyle is not likely to be back with his regular classmates anytime soon. Efforts by Daryl George's attorney to ask a judge to pause his punishment by his Houston area school district over his locks, as well as a civil rights lawsuit he and his family filed in September, remain on hold in federal court. George, 18, returned to in-school suspension at his campus, Barbers Hill High School in Mount Bellevue, Texas, last week, and for now he will remain there. Before that, he had spent a month at an off-site disciplinary program. Here are some things to know regarding why George's discipline over his hairstyle has continued for months, why his school district believes its actions have been justified, and how various legal issues are complicating George's situation. George was first pulled from his classroom in August after school officials said his locks fell below his eyebrows and earlobes and violated the district's dress code. His family argues his hairstyle does not break any rules. Allie Booker, the attorney for George's family, said after a hearing Wednesday on the federal lawsuit that people have been trying to tell George he should give up and cut his hair. But he's not going to break. He's strong. He's like, I'm not going to cut my hair, but I just can't believe I'm going through this, Booker said. But Booker added she fears George could ultimately be expelled. George's family has argued his punishment is discriminatory and violates the Crown Act, which became law in Texas in September and is intended to prohibit race-based hair discrimination and bars employers and schools from penalizing people because of hair texture or protective hairstyles, including afros, braids, dreadlocks, twist, or bantu knots. In court filings, attorneys for the Barbers Hill School District have said students don't have a protected right under federal law to wear their hair at the length and style of their choice while attending school. During Wednesday's court hearing, Jonathan Brush, one of the school district's attorneys, said Barbers Hill has for decades had a hair restriction policy for male students related to length. Locks have always been permitted, Brush said. Jaleesa Reed, an associate professor at Cornell University, whose research focuses on the intersections of beauty culture, identity, and place informed by human geography, said repeated attempts to control black hair expression through such policies shows the need for the Crown Act at the federal level. William Sherman, an attorney in Washington, D.C., and the legal strategist for the Crown Act, said that George is being denied an education. Why? Because his hairstyle does not fit the Eurocentric ideal of neat and clean, he said. George's family has filed a formal complaint with the Texas Education Agency and a federal civil rights lawsuit against Governor Greg Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton, along with the school district, alleging they failed to enforce the Crown Act. The lawsuit is before U.S. District Judge Charles Eskridge. The school district has filed a separate lawsuit in state district court asking a judge to clarify whether its dress code restrictions limiting student hair length for boys violates the Crown Act. But George's attorney filed a motion to move the lawsuit to federal court. That separate case is before another Houston federal judge. During Wednesday's court hearing, Eskridge discussed a motion to consolidate the two lawsuits, as well as motions to dismiss the lawsuit against Abbott and Paxton and the school district, and to move the case to federal court in nearby Galveston. Booker said she is hoping to argue a motion asking for a temporary injunction that would halt the school district's punishment of George until his case is resolved. But, she said, she can't do that until Eskridge rules on these other motions first, and that might not happen until early next year. Texas leaders approve new school library rules. Talia Richmond, Dallas Morning News. Texas school libraries must have policies to prohibit the possession or purchase of books determined to be sexually explicit. The State Board of Education on Wednesday signed off on guidelines for school library rules, giving their approval ahead of a looming January 1st deadline. The move comes after years of acrimony over what books belong on campuses, with conservative politicians and parents calling for a crackdown on titles they view as inappropriate. It was a work of deep value and importance to bring the library standards to fruition. In Texas, parents have been identifying this issue to schools without the necessary support of law, said SBOE member Audrey Young, a Trinity Republican who chairs the Committee on Instruction. Representative Jared Patterson, Republican Frisco, celebrated the approval of standards to bring schools into compliance with a law he championed this year. To be very clear, the work before you is critically important, he said in a letter to state board members. The materials I personally fought are outrageous and so explicit in nature that news programs could not even show the images on screen or read the passages over the radio due to FCC standards. Many of the books that landed in the crosshairs involved LGBTQ storylines or centered diverse characters. A Penn American report found Texas has removed more books from school libraries than in any other state. Roughly 800 books, many delving into themes of race, sexuality, and gender, were pulled between July 2021 and June 2022. The Reader Act, sponsored by Patterson, requires vendors that sell books to school libraries issue ratings for their titles if they contain sexual content. The bill prohibits a vendor from selling library books that are rated sexually explicit. A group of book vendors and associations is challenging the law in court, arguing it is too broad and vague. Its future remains unclear. Obituaries and death notices. Hector E. Bud Saunders. Hector E. Bud Saunders, 78, of Midland, passed away on December 12, 2023. A Remembering Bud service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, December 16, 2023, at The Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland, Texas. Bud was born on December 2, 1945, in Monahans, Texas, to parents Martha and Millard Saunders. Bud is survived by his wife, Margaret, and two daughters, Jackie Lee Lanning and Becca Saunders Benson. He also has one son, David Parker, seven grandchildren, and two great-grandchildren. Bud is also survived by two sisters, Pat Underwood and Jaylene Oakes. Bud was preceded in death by his parents and nephew, Scott Underwood. Bridget Yvette Dickens, Bridget Yvette Dickens, age 59 of Midland, went to be with her Lord and Savior on December 10, 2023. Bridget was born on January 5, 1964, to George and Maureen Dickens in Midland. Preceding Bridget in death were her parents, George and Maureen Dickens, her grandparents, George and Fleeter Dickens, and Johnny and Lily Henderson, and one nephew, Baby Joe. She leaves to cherish her memories sisters Cheryl Hearn, Sonia Green, Cassandra Dickens Arrington, and brothers Gary Dickens, George Dickens, Anthony Dickens, and Christopher Dickens. She also had numerous nieces and nephews. A visitation will be held on Sunday, December 17th, from 2 to 6 p.m. at Mayberry Funeral Home. A celebration of life will be held at Alexander Temple, COGIC, in Midland at 11 a.m. on Monday, December 18th, 2023, with interment immediately following at Rest Haven North Memorial Park. David Ross Stewart. David Ross Stewart, age 68 of Midland, passed away unexpectedly on Thursday, December 7, 2023. Mr. Stewart was born in Hobbs, New Mexico on September 22, 1955. His parents, David W. and Noma T. Stewart of Hobbs, New Mexico, preceded him in death. David leaves behind his wife of 44 years, Beth Clark Stewart, and daughter Jessica E. Stewart, his sister, Dana L. Stewart, and numerous nieces and nephews. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. No services are scheduled. Jeremy P. Robledo. Jeremy P. Robledo, 24, passed away on Saturday, December 9, 2023. Viewing will be Friday, December 15th, 2023, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary beginning at 7 o'clock p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service is set for Saturday, December 16th, at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
Kermit man dies in fatal crash along I-20. The Texas Department of Public Safety reported a fatal crash took place on around 6:33 a.m. Wednesday in Ward County. The victim, 32-year-old Benjamin Ray Vasquez of Kermit, was pronounced dead at the scene of the accident along Business Interstate 20 at mile marker 235. Reports indicate that Vasquez was driving a 1998 Ford Taurus and traveling westbound along the interstate. A 2005 Toyota Camry was traveling eastbound while approaching Vasquez. Vasquez failed to drive in a single lane, traveling onto the North Barrow Ditch. The driver then took evasive action to the left, causing Vasquez's Taurus to side-skid into the eastbound lane where it was struck by the Camry, DPS reported. Game card, free popcorn for Synergy Toy Drive participants. Synergy's 7th annual Toy Drive runs now through December 22nd at both the Midland and Odessa locations. To help encourage community members to participate, Synergy is paying back the kindness with one of two prizes. All Synergy locations, Amarillo, Charlotte, Copperas Cove, Granbury, Marble Falls, Midland, Odessa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Wheeling, Illinois, have partnered with local nonprofits to bring new toys to children in need. The Midland Odessa locations will work with Toys for Cops. Founded in 2011, the group distributes new toys through law enforcement, CPS, and crisis intervention. Over the last 7 years, more than 3,500 toys have found new homes with families across the country. Embracing the season of giving, we are thrilled to brighten the holidays for families in need, Tracy Howland, Synergy's Vice President of Marketing, said in a press release. We hope to be delivering joy through our toy drives and bringing smiles to thousands of children in our communities. Those who bring an unwrapped toy valued at $8 or more will receive a $10 game card or a small free popcorn during their Synergy visit. To cash in, just bring your toy to the counter to find a Synergy representative when you first walk in. Synergy Midland is open from noon to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, noon to midnight Friday, 10 a.m. to midnight Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday at 1917 Liberty Drive. Synergy Odessa is open from noon to 11 p.m. Monday through Thursday, noon to 1 a.m. Friday, 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Sunday at 8250 State Highway 191. Report finds Texas methane emissions hit record low in 2022. A new report indicates Permian Basin oil and natural gas producers are succeeding in driving methane emissions lower even as oil and natural gas output rises to record highs. Texans for Natural Gas, an educational campaign of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, released its new report indicating Texas producers drove methane intensity to a record low 0.12% in 2022, even as output reached record levels. The report emphasized the decade-long downward trend in methane intensity. The report comes a week after the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency issued its final regulations covering methane emissions. Ed Longenecker, TIPRO president and spokesperson for Texas for Natural Gas, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, according to a recent study, the new methane rules will directly impact hundreds of thousands of low-producing wells in the United States and could have a notable impact on future oil and gas production volumes. We are currently reviewing the language and coordinating with our members and partner trade associations across the country. I also suspect there will be legal challenges to this rulemaking, so we will need to wait and see how it ultimately plays out. Since the rules are expected to directly impact hundreds of thousands of low-producing wells, TPRO is engaged in a variety of initiatives to specifically help smaller operators, according to Longenecker. He wrote, key elements of these initiatives include providing educational resources and training on methane detection and mitigation techniques, developing a collaborative program to provide affordable leak detection and repair services and routine maintenance, access to funding programs for equipment upgrades and repairs that prevent or reduce methane leakage. Efforts also include guidance on revised emissions reporting through the Environmental Protection Agency Greenhouse Gas Reporting Program, GHGRP, and how this affects producers. Authors of the study noted the U.S. oil and natural gas industry has invested more than $300 billion in technologies to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions over the past two decades. Effective solutions exist, but some are cost prohibitive for certain operators. We are working on a collaborative effort to create some economy of scale for producers in the Permian Basin to access and utilize satellite technology to reduce emissions in partnership with a company called Satellitics, Longenecker said. The consortium will allow more companies to collaboratively monitor overlapping assets of oil and gas and pipeline infrastructure using satellite data analyzed by AI-based analytics that yield actionable alerts, far superior to other providers. This type of innovation and collaboration will continue to expand and positively impact emission reduction efforts beyond the notable and quantifiable success our industry has already achieved, as noted in our new report, he continued. In addition to Satellitics, Permian Basin operators are utilizing drones to access difficult-to-reach areas and fixed cameras and sensors to enable around-the-clock surveillance. through organizations like the Environmental Partnership and Texas Methane and Flaring Coalition. Operators continue to collaborate and share best practices to reduce emissions and remain leaders in sustainable energy production, the report added. The Permian Basin's success in reaching some of the lowest methane intensity rates in the world exemplifies the region's commitment to environmental stewardship. We will continue to proactively work to minimize oil and gas development's environmental impact, all while producing affordable, abundant, and reliable energy, Longenecker concluded. Three things to do in Midland this weekend, December 15th through 17th. Head over to the Ector Theater to see Grammy-winning country icon Michael Martin Murphy in action. Commemorating his successful career, the MMM Cowboy Christmas Spectacular uses multiple forms of media to captivate the audience. Song, dramatic lighting, video, and more. The performance captures the biblical aspects of the holiday season by telling the story of Jesus' birth through merriment and talent produced by the Rio Grande Band and the Rocky Mountain Vintager Dancers. The tickets start at $35 and can be purchased at https://bit.ly/3rgrstx. Friday, 7:30 to 10 p.m., 500 North Texas Avenue, Odessa. Make a Christmas topiary. Join local designer Jennifer O'Reilly for a Christmas tree topiary class at the Blue Door. Ornaments, bows, and other festive toppers will be free to use on the hand-decorated shrubbery. Drinks will be available for purchase from the Blue Door and food from Tequila's. To reserve a spot, Venmo $65 to @Jennifer-O'Reilly-7. Saturday, 4:30 p.m., 4610 North Garfield Street, Suite D. Experience a folkloric holiday. The University of Texas Rio Grande Valley takes over the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center for an evening of swirling dresses, lively violins, and tons of horns in a mariachi Christmas triumph. Folkloric dancing by the Ballet Folkloric UTRGV crew reflects the traditions of Mexico at Christmas, while the sounds of mariachi Atzlin brings a festive sound. Tickets start at $15 and can be purchased at www.wagnernoel.com. Sunday, doors open at 6 p.m., show at 7 p.m., 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788.
Blood pressure. Study shows the effect of a teaspoon less of salt. Reducing salt consumption by just one teaspoon a day could lower your blood pressure as much as hypertension medication, according to research presented at the American Heart Association's recent scientific sessions and published in JAMA. The finding stems from a study of 213 adults, 50 to 75 years old, including people whose blood pressure was considered normal, as well as those with high blood pressure, hypertension, either treated or untreated. Researchers recorded the participants' blood pressure after they had adhered for 1 week to a low-sodium diet. Meals, snacks, and beverages that included about one teaspoon less of table salt, 2.3 grams of sodium, than their usual diet. That was compared with the participants' blood pressure after they had consumed a high-sodium diet for a week. For nearly three-fourths of the participants, blood pressure was lower with the low-sodium diet. That diet resulted in, on average, a systolic blood pressure that was 8 mmHg, millimeters of mercury, the standard of measurement for blood pressure, lower than the systolic pressure recorded after a high-sodium diet, and 6 mmHg lower than after their usual diet. Systolic blood pressure, the top or first number in a blood pressure reading, represents the force produced by the heart when it beats, pushing blood through the arteries. The researchers wrote that their findings indicate that, quote, clinically meaningful lowering of blood pressure through dietary sodium reduction can be achieved safely and rapidly within 1 week, end quote. Having high blood pressure increases a person's risk for a heart disease, heart attack, or stroke, but also raises the likelihood of developing a range of health problems, including kidney disease, visual problems, sexual dysfunction, and peripheral artery disease. Nearly half of U.S. adults, about 120 million people, have hypertension or are taking medication for it, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Mayo Clinic Minute. GERD is not just heartburn. Gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, is one of the most common digestive disorders in the world. It happens when acid comes up from the stomach, which is acid-resistant, into the esophagus, which is less acid-resistant. Dr. James East, a gastroenterologist at Mayo Clinic Healthcare in London, says GERD may be common, but there can be potentially severe complications if it's ongoing and left untreated. Quote, GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, is when you get acid and chemical damage to the lining of the esophagus, end quote, says East. You might feel a lump in the throat, have difficulty swallowing, have chest pain, a cough, or have worsening asthma-type symptoms. Quote, complications of GERD include esophagitis, inflammation in the bottom of the esophagus, end quote, says East. Quote, if this is persistent, you can develop scarring and a stricture, end quote. But if it's persistent and heals, the lining of the esophagus can change to a more acid-resistant form, which is Barrett's esophagus. Quote, Barrett's esophagus is a reasonably common complication of GERD, end quote, he says. It affects 10% to 15% of people with GERD, and a much smaller group faces another risk, says East. Quote, about 1 in 200 patients with Barrett's esophagus per year will develop esophageal adenocarcinoma, end quote. There are innovative treatments for GERD and medications like proton pump inhibitors. But first, avoid triggers like coffee, alcohol, and smoking. Quote, if you have severe or frequent GERD, you should seek medical advice, end quote, advises East. Heidelberg's family without civil case against security companies. Family's attorneys still participated in hearing this week involving companies. David Wilson. Attorneys representing the family of slain former Midland Police Department officer Nathan Heidelberg said they only have a civil case against David Wilson on Thursday. The news came after attorneys representing the family participated in a hearing having to do with lawsuits stemming from the killing of Midland Police officer Nathan Heidelberg in March 2019. When an alarm vacantly went off in the home of David Wilson. The alarm dispatched police to his home for a burglary in progress. When the police arrived at Wilson's home, the homeowner mistook them for intruders, leading to Wilson shooting and killing Heidelberg. The two lawsuits in question involve Wilson suing the alarm company, Lydia Security Monitoring, and the alarm insurance company, BAM Security. The second case involves representatives for Heidelberg suing Wilson, as well as Lydia Security Monitoring and BAM Security. According to BAM attorneys' motion to consolidate filed on November 11th, the Heidelberg plaintiffs filed their suit on February 19th, 2021, and Wilson filed suit on February 26th, 2021. According to case files, BAM Entities LLC, separate from BAM Security LLC, was dismissed from the case brought against them. Wilson, BAM Security LLC, BAM's Complete AV, Lydia Monitoring, Security Monitoring, and COPS Monitoring by representatives of Heidelberg on August 15, 2023. The motion made on November 11th was to consolidate a suit made by Heidelberg plaintiffs against Wilson and the security companies and a suit filed by Wilson against the security companies. Consolidation would mean trying the two cases as one. Heidelberg's attorney told the Reporter Telegram that he only has a civil case against David Wilson. However, he discussed why he was participating in a discussion regarding consolidating the cases. Quote, you can see in the public record the basis that consolidation is requested, and it's really based on fairness. There's only way that it's fair, and that's for all the facts to be heard by the same jury, and the kind of let the chips fall where they will, so to speak, end quote, he said. In their motion to consolidate, filed on November 11th, BAM attorneys wrote that the lawsuits arise from the same occurrence, pertain to the same subjects and subject matter, substantially the same witnesses, common jury questions on liability, and common questions of law and fact. BAM attorneys stated that substantially the same evidence, fact issues, and witnesses would be presented at trial in both cases. BAM attorneys cited the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure, that they stated a court may consolidate separate lawsuits if the suits involve common questions of law or fact. On Wednesday, Judge David Rogers, who presides over the 142nd District Court, wanted to ensure a fair trial by hearing attorneys from all parties regarding the consolidation of the cases. BAM attorneys rehashed their argument on Wednesday that because the two cases pertain to the same occurrence and subject matter, the cases should be consolidated and tried as one civil case. Midland lawyer Brian Carney, attorney for Wilson, said after the hearing that the alarm companies want to consolidate the cases to focus blame for the shooting solely on Wilson and deny Wilson of any recovery. The alarm companies want to help the Heidelbergs focus blame on Wilson and take the focus off their alarm system mishap, Carney said. Rogers said Wednesday he would have a decision on whether to consolidate the cases early next week. Mayo Clinic Q&A. Who should get the latest version of COVID-19 vaccine? Dear Mayo Clinic, the Food and Drug Administration recently approved two new COVID-19 vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna. What are the recommendations for who should get it? Answer. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recommended the 2023-2024 COVID-19 mRNA vaccine for everyone 6 months or older. The COVID-19 vaccine is strongly recommended for people who face the highest risk of experiencing complications from the virus. This group includes older people, those with compromised immune systems, and chronic medical conditions such as diabetes and heart disease, and very young children. If you're young and healthy, the vaccine may not benefit you as much, but you still should consider getting it if you live with someone in one of these categories or want to reduce the risk of a COVID-19 infection. Overall, there is little to no harm in getting the vaccine for protection. For most of the population, the risks from the vaccine are much less significant than the risk from COVID-19 itself. While getting the vaccine does not prevent all COVID-19 cases, the latest vaccines aim to reduce the number of hospitalizations, severe illnesses, and deaths from the virus. Even if you have had COVID-19 previously or have been vaccinated, it is important to get the updated COVID-19 vaccine because the immunity from previous vaccines and infections decreases over time. When the virus changes, it can escape the antibodies you formed in reaction to the previous versions of the vaccine. By getting the updated vaccine, you are protecting yourself against the strains that are currently circulating. The 2023-2024 COVID-19 vaccines, produced by Moderna and Pfizer, target a different strain of COVID-19 than was in the original vaccine. Think influenza vaccines. They are all flu vaccines, but the strains they protect against change year after year. The updated vaccine targets the XBB.1.5 strain that has been